Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 5, beginning with Text 5. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Munaya Sadhu Prishtoham. Bhavadbir loka mangalam yat krita krishna samprashno yenatma supasidati. Translation. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are relevant to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. So we'll read the first paragraph. Purport. Since it has been stated herein before that in the Bhagavatam, the absolute truth is to be known, the questions of the sages of Namasharanya are proper and just, because they pertain to Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15, the Personality of Godhead says that in all the Vedas there is nothing but the urge for searching after Him, Lord Krishna. Thus the inquiries that pertain to Krishna are the sum and substance of all the Vedic inquiries. So this completes the introduction of the of Suta Goswami. The introduction to before his verses of glorification and praise of the spiritual master and of the process of Krishna Katha before he's going to begin answering the questions in the next verse. And this is also very similar in many ways to the first verse. Again, the word is samprashno, that the questions are complete and they're relevant. And the reason why they're complete and relevant is because these questions are concerned with the perfection of life, which will be described in the next verse. The questions can invoke Krishna Katha. Same thing we described at the very first verse of this chapter, how purifying Krishna Katha is, as Srila Prabhupada says in one purport in the second canto. It's actually the first verse of the second canto, where Sukadeva Goswami, after hearing the questions of Maharaj Parikit, says, Vriyan Esha Te Prashna, your question is glorious. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna Katha is like the flowing of the Ganga. Where the Ganga flows, everything becomes auspicious. Everything becomes purified. Everything becomes perfect. The place becomes perfect. The person who's asking the questions, the person's hearing the asking the questions, the person who's answering the questions, everything becomes auspicious. This word for auspiciousness used in this verse is mangalam. Mangalam means it'll do welfare. It'll do good. It's like loka mangalam. Just like in the Sad Goswami Astakam, it says, Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Sad Dharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyao Shiranya Karo. That the six Goswamis, they Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Sad Dharma Samstapako, they analyzed and expertly analyzed the scriptures to establish dharma. Saddharma samstapako. Saddharma samstapako. Lokanam hitakarano. And therefore they did good for the whole world. Lokanam hitta. Hitta means to do good, and mangalam means auspicious. So this is lokamangalam. Bhavadbir. This is does good for all of you. Your questions, because they invoke Krishna Katha. It does good for everyone. It's the same thing. Lokanam hitakarano. Bhavadbir lokamangalam. This knowledge is auspicious. It was also described in the second verse of the first canto. That this knowledge, what is this knowledge? This knowledge is about the absolute truth, the factual reality. Reality means Krishna. And illusion means to see something as separate from Krishna. It's the same thing. Vastavam atra vastu. You factually know the vastu, or the substance of everything, which is Krishna. Then Shivadam. Shivadam means auspicious. Same thing as mangalam. It's auspicious. Why? It uproots all the threefold miseries. So this question, therefore, that it's so nice. Munaya sadhu prishtoham. Sadhu means good, relevant. Prishtoham. Oh, sages, your question is so relevant. It's so good. Bhavadbir loka mangalam. It does welfare the whole world. Why? Yat krita Krishna samprashno. Because it's a question. It's a perfect question because it's about Krishna. Yenatma supersedeti. And therefore the self will be satisfied. Because these questions are asking, what should I do? How everyone's asking that question, but their questions do not lead to the answer. I mentioned before, everyone wants to be satisfied. Why? Because satisfaction is the symptom of that you're rightly situated, that you're doing the right thing. So everyone's asking questions, trying to improve their existence. But because their questions are not directed to the goal of life, then they don't have value. And I'm going to read how Prabhupada discusses this in the purport. The whole world is full of questions and answers. The birds, beasts, and men are all busy in the matter of perpetual questions and answers. This is the world. The world is inquiries. What should I do? Maharaj Prickett asks, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? What should I not do? So people are engaged in trying to get some knowledge or information to improve their life. In the morning, the birds in the nest become busy with questions and answers. And in the evening, also the same birds come back and again become busy with questions and answers. The human being, unless he is fast asleep at night, is busy with questions and answers. The businessmen in the market are busy with questions and answers. And so also the lawyers in the court and the students in the schools and colleges. The legislators in the parliament are also busy with questions and answers. And the politicians and press representatives are all busy with questions and answers. Although they go on making such questions and answers for their whole lives, they are not at all satisfied. Satisfaction of the soul can only be obtained by questions and answers on the subject of Krishna. Okay, next verse, text 6. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adoksaje ahaitaki apatiyata yayatma supasidati The supreme occupation dharma for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. Purport. In this statement, Srila Suta Goswami answers the first question of the sages of Naimisharanya. The sages asked him to summarize the whole range of revealed scriptures, present the most essential parts so the fallen people or the people in general might easily take it up. So now Suta Goswami begins to answer the questions of the sages of Naimisharanya. And he's asking, as Srila Prabhupada said in, I think it was text one of this chapter, the sages of Naimisharanya asked Suta Goswami six questions, and so he's answering them. He's answering them one by one. So he's going to answer the first, this is the answer to the first two questions. There's one answer for two questions. I think I explained that yesterday, that I could ask you, you know, who wrote the Bhaktivedanta purports, who's the founder of Charya of ISKCON. There's two questions, but one answer. And sometimes when questions are asked, you know, they're both trying to elicit the same response. So we'll see a continuity among all the questions. The sages of Naimisharanya asking, if we go back to the scene itself, they're at Naimisharanya at the beginning of Kali Yuga. And therefore, they are seeing the future, and they're seeing the nature of Kali Yuga. That Kali Yuga would be such a disturbing time, and people would be short-lived and misguided, and very unfortunate. And they're asking Suta Goswami, they're actually in Naimisharanya, to counteract that influence, because Naimisharanya is a holy place which has the specific potency to counteract materialism or demoniac influences. So they're asking, of course, they're asking Suta Goswami, he's the Acharya. They have faith in him because he understands the scriptures. Prabhupada says knowledge means, you know, Veda means knowledge. So we have faith in Guru because he knows the Vedas, he knows the scriptures. So they're asking him for a prescription of activities for this particular age. Even the last question, now that Krishna has left the planet, where is knowledge? Where is religion? Where is the, you know, what should we do? So it's not surprising that his answer in text six is dealing with the first two questions, which have similar objectives. The first question is, nischitam ekantikta shreyas. I believe that's it. Ascertain ekantita, the one thing, the absolute good. Shreyas, the ultimate benefit. What is the ultimate benefit, the absolute good. And text 11, the second question, what is the essence of the scriptures so that people can be satisfied? In other words, they want to know what to do. What is a person's duty? What is a person's dharma? So that he can be satisfied. Not in a selfish way satisfied, but satisfaction is the symptom of correct and right behavior. I gave the example of Srila Vyasadeva, who had compiled all the Vedas but was feeling despondency. So his natural question is, what did I do wrong? So they want to find out the correct behavior. And therefore they're asking the Acharya to prescribe the correct activity, knowing that there's a relationship between righteousness and satisfaction. In fact, I was reading yesterday Chanaka Shlokas, and one of his shlokas specifically says that happiness comes from righteousness. Righteousness. And righteousness was the English translation to dharma. So dharma means to do what is right. They're asking those questions. What is right for humanity? What is the proper path? So that they can actually be happy and satisfied in this age of Kali Yuga. So they ask Sutta Goswami. Now there's significance here in this verse. You can imagine the significance because he's not asking for the people 5,000 years ago in India. But the Acharya selects, and according to his not according to his potency, but for example, we follow a teacher and we ask him what to do, because he selects the activity or the path of action for us. But great acharyas, Jagatguru, world acharyas, like Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Vyasadeva, Sutta Goswami, they're selecting not just for a particular disciple or person, but for a particular time. So Sutta Goswami was asked as the acharya, because it's all the sages congregating at the beginning of Kali Yuga and foreseeing the future. So they're actually, are you sleeping?
No.
Okay. So Sutta Goswami is the acharya that is going over the scriptures and selecting the right path of action. The right path of action for Kali Yuga. So what he says in terms of his prescription of activity for satisfaction is also for us. This is the glory of the teacher, the acharya. Like the Sad Goswami Astakam, and Srinivas Acharya glorifies the six Goswamis. He says, Nana Shastra Vacharanaika Nipano Sadharma Samstapako. Nana Shastra. They went through Nana Shastra. All these scriptures. Nana Shastra, Vacharanaika, Nipano. And they studied them. And then they picked out the activity to establish Sad-Dharma, the correct path of action. Lokanam Hitakarano, to Bhuvane. And therefore, Lokanam, they did good for the whole world. So this is the same thing. It was mentioned in the previous verse. Muniyo sadhu prishtau ham. Their questions are relevant. Why? Bhavadbhir loka mangalam. Because their questions were invoking the activity to do for the people's welfare, for everyone. Therefore, in this verse, it says pum sa, for mankind, or as Prabhupada says in the translation, the activity for mankind or for all humanity. And therefore in text 9 in chapter 1, when the question was asked, it was nischitam ekantaka shreyas pumsam, same word, for all mankind. So now his answer is coming. He's selected. And they're very attentive to hear, because his answer will be the panacea or cure-all for dissatisfaction in this age. The analogy that I used before to explain the work of the acharya and therefore will help us understand the significance and relevance of this particular verse, which is his selection, and he's announcing to them, he's answering their questions, this is the activity I select for you. And for all humanity in Kali Yuga, which is the absolute and ultimate good and the essence of the scriptures, and which will satisfy the self. If you look at the scene, if I can make an analogy, the people in Kali Yuga are suffering. It's an epidemic. It's an epidemic of disturbance and ignorance. And the sages of Naimisharanya are concerned citizens. Responsible citizens. So let's say there's an epidemic. Responsible citizens see the people suffering. Of course, the sages of Naimisharanya, they're looking into the future and they can see what the influence will be. Trikalagya. It's just like someone in the fall looking in the future and seeing the winter is coming. So they're in, you know, they're at the beginning of Kali Yuga. They're at the beginning of the winter and they know it's going to get worse. They can see the influence. They can see how disturbable people will get. The concerned citizens, they look at the condition of the people and they go to the pharmacy. The pharmacy has so many medicines. So let's say there's an epidemic and they go to the pharmacy, but they can't help the people even though all the medicines are there, because they have to have someone who has knowledge who can diagnose the condition of the patient and then select the proper medicine for their cure. So this is what's happening. The epidemic is like the epidemic of ignorance in Kali Yuga. The sage of Namasranya are seeing that. And then they're asking Sutta Goswami, who's the acharya, to select. Just like the doctor will select from the pharmacy which medicine. He just won't give medicine. He'll select. So they're asking him, there's the Vedas. It has all the different activities, burini, karmani, text 11. There's so many activities to perform. But now, look at the patients. Look at Kali Yuga. This is what's going to happen. Now you select. But he's not only asking them to select, but also, because of the nature of Kali Yuga, where people are short-lived and they don't have the austerity or the time to undergo all the prescribed rules and regulations, he's therefore asking for the ultimate and absolute good. We discussed that. So now here is the answer. And the answer is that the supreme occupation, dharma, or the right thing to do, the righteous or proper thing to do, so people can become satisfied, is bhakti, yato bhakti adokshaje. It's bhakti. It's devotional service. This is his answer. So this is what will satisfy people. This is the essence of the scripture, and this is the absolute and ultimate good. So what is bhakti? There's a nice definition by Bhaktivinoda Thakur on his commentary of the verse Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. We're wandering in universe, from species of life to species of life, until we get Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. Konya Bhagavan Jeev, until the living entity becomes fortunate and he gets the Bhakti Lata Bij. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes what is the Bhakti Lata Bij. The Bhakti Lata Bij is the deep concept that I should serve Krishna and nothing else. It's Bhakti Lata Bij means that Shraddha or that faith. And what's that? Shraddha means, Srila Prabhupada said, to trust in something sublime. So that's what you get from the spiritual master. You get a concept or an idea that to act not selfishly or for sense gratification, but to act for the pleasure of Krishna, to sacrifice, to work, or to act for the pleasure of Krishna is actually a very wonderful thing. And even if we're not experiencing it, we have some attraction for it, but we have trust and faith that this is the most wonderful thing. And as our devotional service increases, then that attraction to give Krishna pleasure and our faith that this is a good thing will increase. So what this verse is actually recommending is uttama bhakti, pure devotional service. And pure devotional service is defined by, the best definition is by Srila Rupa Goswami. Actually, Srila Rupa Goswami's contribution is that he gave precise definitions to all the categories of devotional, all the categories and stages of devotional service. So at the beginning of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the first verse, it's actually not the first verse, but in the first chapter, or the first wave in the Eastern Division, he gives a theme verse of the book, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Jnanavritam Anukulyena Krishna Anu Shilanam Bhaktir Uttama, which means that Uttama Bhakti, or pure devotional service, are those activities which are intended for Krishna's pleasure and not mixed with any other desire. Prabhupada also discusses that in the purport. Sometimes in Srila Prabhupada's purports, verses are hidden in general English descriptions. So it said, therefore, devotional service must be pure in quality, without the least desire for material enjoyment. One should therefore accept the superior quality of occupation in the form of devotional service of the Lord, without any tinge of unnecessary desire. That's anyabhilashita shunyam. Without any tinge of unnecessary desire, fruit of activities, jnana karma jnanavritam, fruit of activities and philosophical speculation. This alone can lead one to perpetual solace in his service. So this is the activity it's the goal of the scriptures. If you don't get to the goal, then all the activities you've done to get to the goal become useless. So because there's no time we discussed this in Kali Yuga, we don't have the time or strength to perform all the rituals and austerities and prescribed duties that are mentioned in the scriptures that are meant to progressively bring us to a perfected state. In Kali Yuga, we have to immediately perform the topmost occupation or activity. As Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, the perfected state of the living entity is called the devotee. Now, in Srila Prabhupada's purport, the point that he brings out in this particular verse, he brings out, of course, the whole verse, but what he's stressing and what is most important for us to understand, that for our devotional service to actually, you know, satisfy our hankerings, or not satisfy our hankerings, but for devotional service to give us solace, or to actually satisfy us, it must be pure. It doesn't mean that we have to be pure in heart, but it means that we have to be free from motive. If you are surrendered to the desire of Krishna as it comes through the parampara and the spiritual master, and act on that platform, then you're acting purely, even if your heart is not pure. You're actually performing bhakti, because what does bhakti mean? Bhakti means that we should do activities that bring pleasure to Krishna. To bring pleasure to someone, you have to do what satisfies them, or does what fulfills their desire. So to actually perform devotional service, we have to perform activities that are following Krishna's desire. And Krishna's desire comes in the parampara. So when we make that determination to take shelter of take shelter of Krishna, which means that our activities will follow his desire, which comes through the parampara, then we're acting purely, even if there still may be desires, material desires within our heart. Now the point that Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport of stresses is that for devotional service to satisfy one, it has to be causeless. What is called a hoitiki? And it has to be causeless and without stop. In other words, we have to become fixed in devotional service, and we have to do that service without any motive except the pleasure of Krishna. We have to train ourselves in this type of consciousness. We have to be very, very careful and kind of check ourselves. when we begin to do our devotional activities for sense gratification, or for material gain, or for personal reason. One example I could give is that for myself, and there are injunctions in the scriptures about this. For example, I'm reciting Bhagavatam. Now, in a spiritual community, people very much like to hear Bhagavatam. And therefore, people in India, when they speak Bhagavatam, people give them money. So therefore, people who are not detached, then they learn the Bhagavatam, so-called, and they speak it. So it's speaking about Krishna. So that's kirtanam. They're doing kirtanam. But it does not satisfy this. It doesn't satisfy their self. It doesn't satisfy them, because it's not pure. But why are they doing it? They're speaking because they want to make a living. They want money from it. So even though it's a devotional activity, they're speaking here. Now, they may be very, very corrupt. They may be doing it only for that cause. And there's great warnings in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself that you should not hear from that type of person. And that for a person to speak the Bhagavatam, he has to cultivate detachment. So there are injunctions like that in the scripture, but it's still relevant to us, because those type of attitudes or moods can enter into our devotional service. And when it mixes in our devotional service, then it will not give satisfaction, because it's no longer bhakti, or it's mixed bhakti. And it's bhakti which actually satisfies the self. So you have to be very, very careful about that, to keep the devotional service pure. We should keep the devotional service pure. Therefore, the word is used, haitaki. Now, haitaki, what haitaki means literally is causeless. Just like Krishna is the cause of all causes, he's without any cause. So when Krishna acts, he's only acting out of his own will. In other words, there's nothing outside of his own will that's forcing him to act. He acts for his actions, there's nothing outside of himself that's causing his actions. So when we say causeless bhakti, we mean that one is performing bhakti only for bhakti. We're doing activities to please Krishna, only to please Krishna. There's no other cause. There's no other motive to our activities. And this is what Prabhupada is discussing in the purport. He discusses Pravritti Marg and Nivritti Marg. Pravritti Marg is the path of sense enjoyment. Nivritti Marg is the path of renunciation. And when he's discussing Nivritti Marg, he's specifically discussing devotional service. That you're not acting for sense gratification. You're just acting for the pleasure of Krishna. And Pravritti Marg means the path of sense gratification. Religion can be motivated. It was discussed in the second verse that the Bhagavatam only deals with pure devotional service. Dharma projita kaitavo. That religion that's performed with some motive is rejected. Motive means some material consciousness, or you perform religion for sense gratification. The Prabhupada discusses in the purport, the material existence of the living being is a diseased condition of life. Material existence is temporary, illusory, and full of miseries. And actual life, or the path of sacrifice for the supreme cause, is superior. This is our actual life, devotional service. Actual life is spiritual existence, a Brahma-Bhuta existence, where life is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. So if we perform devotional service and some motive is mixed in there, then it won't be completely satisfying. And this is what Srila Prabhupada is going to discuss. Devotional service The path of progressive material is temporary, miserable, and illusory, but devotional service to the Supreme Lord, which leads one to eternal, blissful, and all-cognizant life, is called the superior quality of occupation. This is sometimes polluted when mixed with the inferior quality. For example, adoption of devotional service for material gain is certainly an obstruction to the progressive path of renunciation. And therefore, the conclusion is one should therefore accept the superior quality of occupation in the form of devotional service of the Lord without any tinge of unnecessary desire, fruitive activities, and philosophical speculation. This alone could lead one to perpetual solace in his service. So the point that Srila Prabhupada is making here is that only when devotional service is performed with any motive will the self actually become satisfied. And he gives a very very interesting example in the purport. I thought about this for a long time, and I think I have some clue now to understand it. And he discusses I'll read it and then I'll explain it. Each and every living being has his eternal form in the spiritual existence, and Krishna is the eternal attraction for all of them. Krishna is the complete whole, and everything else is his part and parcel. The relation is one of the servant and the served. It is transcendental and completely distinct from our experience in material existence. Now, this relation of servant and the served is the most congenial form of intimacy. So it satisfies one. In relationship is intimacy. This is what satisfies one in a relationship. Is intimacy. And intimacy, and we are part and parcel of God. So our position is in relationship to God. Anyway, it's a subtle point, but what satisfies one in a relationship is intimacy. And intimacy comes when there actually is real relationship. Relationship means love and service. For example, if there are two friends, right, and you have a friend, our enjoyment in the world is not just sense gratification. Our enjoyment are our relationships and the love that we experience, because this is the constitutional position of a living entity, that he's part and parcel of God, and he's meant for service. So it's actually service which actually satisfies one, or devotion. Everyone is looking for that love to be satisfied, not just sensual experiences, but loving relationships and intimacy in loving relationships. So this is what Srila Prabhupada is saying. I'll give you an example. If you have a friend, what is real friendship? Real friendship is your friend acts for your pleasure and you act for your friend's pleasure. Now, if you have a relationship with someone who's, if you have friends, but actually they're not acting for your pleasure, but they want something out of the relationship. Let's say that you're a very wealthy person. Sometimes we see that very rich people, they feel depressed and dissatisfied in relationships. Why? Because everyone wants their money. So people are acting in friendship for them, but for them, their motive is not to help them. Their motive is to get something from them. So they don't really experience intimacy in that relationship, and therefore they feel dissatisfied. Because people are acting in an immotivated way. So the real relationships that satisfy one are when they're actually pure. Pure friendship means that I like you, and I want to help you, and I don't want anything out of it. It's not a business relationship. You know, you may meet someone and they shake your hand, you have dinner together, and, you know, there's so many exchanges. But it's not satisfying as friendship is, because the person just wants to make a business deal. So it's similarly with our relationship with Krishna. If we approach Krishna like that, that, you know, we're performing devotional service because it increases our social status. Oh, I'm serving you, Krishna, because it increases my social status. Or I'm serving you, Krishna, because I can, because it's an occupation. So we have to develop this consciousness of bhakti or love or devotion, that we serve Krishna causelessly, just for his pleasure. And even if we don't have that feeling, we have to practice it by lining ourselves up with Krishna's desire as it comes through the parampara. I want to serve you, Krishna, and I know your desire comes from Srila Prabhupada, and therefore I'm surrendering to his mission. That bhakti or that service, which is acted on a platform free from motive, which is basically called sadhana bhakti or taking shelter of the guru, that will satisfy us. That will give us a sense of intimacy in the relationship. So therefore, Prabhupada said, the relationship of servant and the served is the most congenial form of intimacy. We'll actually get that intimacy, that loving reciprocation, when we serve in a fixed way without any motive. And one could realize it as devotional service progresses. So as you progress in devotional service, your bhakti will increase. Or as I mentioned, bhakti, the deep concept that I want to give Krishna pleasure, your desire to give Krishna pleasure and serve him and your attraction for it will increase. And therefore the intimacy of your relationship with God will increase. And you'll become progressively more satisfied until there's nothing else in your consciousness but that desire to please God. And that's called prema. And that's the most ecstatic position. That loving relationship, which is so intense and so developed and so natural, completely satisfies the self. So here what it says in the verse is the supreme occupation is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service. So the right thing or the right activity for us to do are those activities which will bring us closer to this point. Everyone should engage himself in that transcendental loving service of the Lord, even in the present conditional state of material existence. That will gradually give one clue to actual life and please him to complete satisfaction. Because this is such a significant verse and the basis of the chapter, I want to expand it a little bit further and discuss some other points that Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport. Now, the point that Prabhupada is making is why only bhakti will satisfy us. So he makes a very interesting point that why bhakti will satisfy us. And the point he's making us is to satisfy us. Our occupation or activities must fulfill our needs. And our needs are dependent on who we are. So the activity that will actually satisfy the self, or the dharma, or the occupation that will satisfy ourself, has to do with who we are and therefore what our needs are. We are part and parcel of God. And therefore we are meant for his service. So the activity that will actually satisfy us is service to God. Example that Prabhupada often gives that helps explain this point is the hand is part of the body. So what is the hand? The hand is a part of the body. And what is it for? It's for service to the body. So the need of the hand is to serve the body. So only when the hand acts, only when the hand fulfills its need, which is dependent on what it is, it's part of the body, and it serves the body, then it becomes nourished and satisfied. So we're part and parcel of God. And therefore, our need is to serve him. And when we do that, we feel satisfied. I'm going to read how Prabhupada has discussed this in terms of defining dharma. It's a very interesting definition. We have purposely denoted dharma as occupation because the word meaning of the root meaning of the word dharma is that which sustains our existence. A living being's sustenance of existence is to coordinate his activities with his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Krishna is the central pivot of living beings, and he is the all-attractive living entity or eternal form amongst all other living beings or eternal form. So Prabhupada has denoted Dharma as that which sustains our existence, and then explains that that which sustains our existence depends on what we are. So, for example, if you think you're the material body, then the occupation or activities you do to satisfy your needs will be in terms of sense gratification and material advancement. And therefore, when you think of what is your duty, what is your occupation? Well, my occupation is the briefcase, it's the suit, it's the tie, it's the office. Why? Because by this activity, I get money. And by this money, I sustain my existence as the body. I get money, I become popular, I get more sense gratification, my family is pleased, I get more and more material acquisitions. And Prabhupada will discuss in a future purport, if you think that you're the mind, then the activities that you feel will sustain your existence is speculation, philosophy, poetry, intellectual activities. But both the concept of the proper soul, this is another purport, and how it is beyond the purview of the body and mind, they are not satisfied in the performance of their occupational duties. Because they're doing activities to sustain something that's not actually them, the body and the mind. And therefore they can't become satisfied. The question of the satisfaction of the self is raised herein. This is text 8. The self is beyond the gross body and subtle mind. He is the potent active principle of the body and mind. Without knowing the need of the dormant soul, one cannot be happy simply by emolument of the body and mind. The body and the mind are but superfluous outer coverings of the spirit soul. The spirit soul's needs must be fulfilled. To become satisfied, you have to fulfill your needs. Simply by cleansing the cage of the bird, one does not satisfy the bird. One must actually know the needs of the bird himself. So therefore, Sutta Goswami, what is the activity that will satisfy the self? He's saying it's devotional service. Why? Because that's what we are, is a servant of Krishna and a devotee. We're part and parcel, and we're meant for his service. And therefore, Prabhupada explains in the purport that the occupation that will really sustain our existence is devotional service, pure devotional service. And if we're not doing that, we're not going to be satisfied. And this is what Sutta Goswami is recommending. Now, just one other point that I think I really have to bring in this purport is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's definition of Dharma. Very interesting, and it also relates to help us understand why only devotional activities ultimately will give solace and satisfaction to the self. Bhaktivinoda Thakur defines Dharma very interesting in this book called Jiva Dharma. Jiva means living entity, the duty or religion of living entity. So Dharma, he says, or the duty or religion of the living entity, or what he should be doing, he said, is his eternal nature. And this is an interesting definition. Eternal nature, the eternal nature of a living entity, he says, is its constituent, or what it's made of, and its function, or what it's made for. So unless you know who you are, that's why self-realization is such an important point. Unless you know who you are, or what you're made of and who you are, let's say unless you know what you're made of, then you can't know what you're made for. And you therefore cannot be satisfied. So he says, therefore, what is our eternal nature? What are we made of and what are we made for? We're Krishna's energy. That's what we're made of. And what are we created or made for? We're made for his service. And therefore, the dharma, or the right thing for the living entity to do, is serve Krishna. And this also becomes, if you understand this, you understand the Krishna conscious standard of ethics. Those activities which cover our eternal nature are wrong or unethical. And what is right or ethical or righteous is those activities that uncover our eternal nature. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yadahi yadahi dharmasya, that same word, yadahi yadahi dharmasya glaniya bhavati bharata. When there is discrepancy in dharma, Krishna comes. Why? Because what is dharma? In the purport of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains that dharma are those activities which push us, towards full surrender, push us towards surrender to Krishna. Therefore, the eternal nature, the Sanatan Dharma of the living entity is a part and parcel of Krishna and meant for his service. And this is actually the purpose of the scriptures. This is the ultimate and absolute good. Vedaischa sarveham eva vedyo vedanta krit eva vid eva chaham. Krishna says, of all the Vedas, I am to be known. You can see how there's a consistency of philosophical concepts and points in the Bhagavatam, because in the first verse, it gave a description of reality. Reality was that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and everything else is his energy. And therefore, what we should be doing? Param satyam dhimahi. We should be meditating and worshipping him. In Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter, when all the yoga systems are concluded, it says, yogi nam api sarvesham madgate nataratmanam shradhavam bhajate yo mam sameyuktam matomata. That of all yogis, he who worships me with faith and devotion is the topmost of all. And when Prabhupada describes this word bhajana, worship, he said you can't translate it into English as just worship. Because he says worship entails that there's some option. But he said bhajan means that you have to worship Krishna or else you're fallen. In other words, that's who we are. We are part and parcel of Krishna. And unless we do that, then there's no value or meaning to our life. And there's dissatisfaction or suffering. When you act outside of your constitution or nature, you suffer. Therefore, the definition in Ayurveda for disease means a crime against nature. That's what suffering, a crime. In other words, suffering is not bad, but suffering is a system of things that you're doing wrong. So that's why there's suffering in the world. It's a symptom that we're not situated properly according to our nature, according to our function or purpose. We're not situated properly and therefore we suffer. And the other example that Srila Prabhupada gives that's very nice is a fish. A fish by nature is aquatic. It's made, you know, if you look at it, it's made for water and it's supposed to swim. So when it acts against its nature, there's no way it can be satisfied. And therefore, if a fish is outside of the water, the only thing you can do to actually help him is activities that bring him towards the water. So that's actually what religion means or dharma means. And in this verse, which can attain loving devotional service, the relevance of any activities are that they're bringing you in this direction of your dharma or your eternal nature. That's what religion is. And that's the ultimate goal of religion. And therefore, because they're asking the essence of the scripture and the absolute ultimate good, he's stating it. It's activities which one can attain to bhakti. Now, this is going to be elaborated. So really, basically, what's being established here is the principle of religion. what is it? It's also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, the principle of religion is Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pabaksham Bhagaman Dharmyam. Dharmyam. Devotional service is dharmyam. It's the principle of religion. One other point that I think will help kind of bring out the real significance of this verse and what is religion, why bhakti is actually religion. It's the paro. It says paro dharma. It's the supreme occupation. And why it will satisfy the self. As Prabhupada said, the root meaning of dharma is that which sustains one's existence. So Prabhupada's taking it from the Sanskrit. So the derivative of dharma, there was once an article by Garuda Prabhu, who was, I think he's getting his PhD from Harvard soon, and very brilliant devotee. And he gave an article about dharma, and he said the root meaning of dharma is essence, really. And what is essence? It's the quality which cannot be taken away. That's really what religion is. It's the quality. The religion or essence of water is liquidity. If I give you something, it's not wet, it's not water. And if you mistake it for something else and don't understand the essence of water, then you may not use it properly. If you don't really know what it is, it won't have any value. Somehow or other. So this is the essence. So the essence of living entity, the quality that cannot be taken away, is his eternal nature, which is devotional service, or that he's a part and parcel of God and meant for his service. So this is the inherent quality of the living entity. And therefore Prabhupada gives the example when a lady, she loses her husband, her family, her children, then she sees she has a dog. Because this is the quality that cannot be taken away. That we're meant for bhakti or love. We're meant for devotion. We're meant to do our activities to serve or please. Actually, because we're part and parcel of God, we're meant to work in coordination with Him. Therefore, in the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada gives a very nice, you can read that in the preface, I think, you know, where that loving propensity can be actually satisfied. Because that's our inherent nature. Where it can actually be satisfied. So I think we'll continue with the next verse. So, I want to discuss one more thing about verse 6, and I'm speaking on it so elaborately because it's explaining the principle of religion, pure devotional service. And how I want to discuss a little bit how we can actually use this verse. In other words, it's meant to be applied in our life. So I was just thinking, one more thing I'll say, it's just a practical realization, is when we went yesterday on Harinam. You know, and because I had this verse in my mind, which basically means that when you perform devotional service, your consciousness should be, you know, I'm doing this so Krishna can be pleased. Not I'm doing this so that I can be pleased. So I was just thinking when I was walking and chanting, I was actually in that mood, and I was thinking, over the years and in different times when I went on Harinam, how many other things could actually come into my mind? You know, I'm doing it because I look cool, or maybe I want to be freaky, or, you know, it's fun, or I don't want to do it because it's not fun, and the people that are with me don't represent me. I saw that in our devotional service, how that fruitive consciousness, that material consciousness of I am the enjoyer and my activity should be for my own satisfaction and pleasure, how it can enter into our devotional service. And I saw how I was so fixed by studying this verse, and that when I was out there, I was chanting and I was in the conscious mood. You know, let this be pleasing to Krishna. All I want is His pleasure and His happiness. And in that mood I should chant, and in that mood I should do all my devotional service. It's a very tough thing to come to that standard. But by understanding what actually religion is and what the best occupation is, and what actually can give us satisfaction and happiness, we start to attempt to change that consciousness, which is so rooted in us inherently. The fact that we have a body means that we have this consciousness. Because the body is a product of the consciousness that, you know, a material consciousness. I want to be the enjoyer and controller. So the fact that you have the body, we're in this consciousness, and we're so conditioned to this consciousness. So this consciousness enters into our devotional service. So by hearing the tattva, hearing the truth, you know, you get impetus and inspiration to try to put that in the forefront of your consciousness. Only for Krishna, not for me. James? What were you thinking on Harinam?
I was recognizing definitely what you're speaking about, that my consciousness was absorbed very much in inspiration in serving Lord Chaitanya. So when we were doing Harinam, I felt as if we were freely spreading the message or the holy name, and that was my only purpose. And therefore, the purport of the last verse, I felt I was in the right. This was Dharma, and this was righteous. And I felt so natural and free in that activity because my consciousness was merged with that purpose.
And you just want to do your Dharma, your duty.
I did, and that was complete satisfaction.
It made the kirtan sweeter.
It really, yeah, certainly.
Interesting. Okay, we're going to continue now with the rest of the verses, which will further elaborate on this theme that the principle of religion is to act for the pleasure of Krishna without pollution by material consciousness, without doing it for some personal gain. So we'll go to the next verse, 7. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Janayatyasu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayara Hoitakam. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So what Srila Prabhupada is going to discuss in the... what this verse is doing... In other words, let me see how I can explain it clearly. When you're explaining some point, you also have to be very conscious of not only what you say, but what people will understand. And then you have to clear those doubts. That's a good teacher or that's a good preacher. So he's just recommended bhakti, devotional service. And devotional service doesn't have any material qualification. It's your right, because it's the very nature of your soul. So it's not only your duty, but it's your right. And there's no material qualification to perform devotional service. I give the example of a mother or let's say a son, and someone is his father. So it's his duty to serve his father, but there's no qualification for serving his father. He doesn't have to be rich. He doesn't have to have knowledge. So there's no material qualification for devotional service. It's just, you just have to do it, which takes the qualification of heart. You have to be non-envious. You have to have the proper objective. You have to change your objective from trying to compete and get ahead in the material world and promote your material position and try to become the controller, which is why we've come to this world. And change that to the objective to serve him. But there's no material qualification. So therefore, because there's no material qualification for devotional service, anyone can take to it. A child can take to devotional service. any class of people can take the devotional service. This is one of the aspects of the Abhideya Tattva, the truth about the practices of Krishna consciousness, our spiritual practices. One of the truths is that the practices of Krishna consciousness are universally applicable. When Lord Brahma heard at the beginning of creation from Lord Krishna the Srimad Bhagavatam in four verses, when he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam in four verses, those four verses discuss the three categories of knowledge. Sambandha, Gyan, which means the relationship of everything, or what is our relationship with God. Prayojan, again, what is the goal of life. And Abhideya, Gyan, what is the activities of the living entity in his relationship with God by which he can achieve the goal of life, which is love of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada gave a simple analogy to help us understand the three categories of knowledge. He described in India when a boy and a girl are to get married, first they're introduced. So that's sambandha gyan. They get to know each other. And then after some time, there's activities in that relationship. That's abhideya. And then there's the result of that a child is born. And that's like the priyojana of the goal. So the abhideya tattva, the activities in our relationship with God or the practices we do to achieve the objective or goal, in devotional saying, so again, when Lord Brahma spoke those four verses, the first two verses were on sambandha gyan, the third verse was on, this is the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam was spoken in four verses. The third verse described the goal of life, and the fourth described the process. And when the process was described, it was called, well, I think it was sarvatra, sarvada, anywhere and anywhere. One should search for this. Love of Godhead, the perfectional state, directly and indirectly, everywhere and anywhere. So the commentary by Srila Prabhupada on everywhere and anywhere means it's universally applicable. It doesn't even depend on species. A dog can practice Krishna consciousness. He can take prasadam. He could, walk into a temple. I told the story about the dog that came on Padayatra and he was walking. It was devotional service. So there's no material qualification. Because there's no material qualification, and this is what Sutta Goswami wants to clear up, some people criticize bhakti as sentimental. Because there's not a qualification of gyan. In other words, if you want to take to the process of gyan or knowledge, you have to be renounced and, you have to live secluded place. So therefore, some criticize bhakti, devotional service. And that's what Prabhupada will say in the purport. Those who consider devotional service to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna to be something like material emotional affairs, they argue that in the revealed scriptures, sacrifice, charity, austerity, knowledge, mystic powers, and similar other processes of transcendental realization are recommended. According to them, bhakti, or the devotional service of the Lord, is meant for those who cannot perform the high-grade activities. Generally, it is said that the bhakti cult is meant for the less intelligent. But this is not the fact. And this is interesting. The bhakti cult is the topmost of all transcendental activities, and therefore it is simultaneously sublime and easy. This is the nature of bhakti, that it's easy because anyone can take to it. But it's sublime because actually it's the topmost activity. And therefore, in a previous purport, Prabhupada said that the process is simple, the application is difficult. The process is simple because there's no material requirement, but the application is difficult because there's actually a spiritual qualification. You have to be pure in heart to surrender to God and be willing to do it. And that surrender to God, even though there's no material qualification, there's a spiritual qualification. You have to be free from envy. So there actually is a qualification, but it's a qualification of heart. And when you do, and that's the goal of all, we discussed that before, that's the sadhya or goal of all activities. It's the goal of all austerities, of all charity, of all knowledge. And therefore, one who's come to the point of serving Krishna is considered to actually already have done all these things. There's one verse in the third canto, and I mean, during class, I think I have to have a notebook in the future. When I don't remember a verse, I have to write it down. But it's one verse in the third canto that says, Aho pata swapachato griyan, yajivagre vartite namatubhyam, te pastapas, yay. I forget. It says, oh, how wonderful it is. Aho pata swapachato griyan. Griyan means glorious. That even a swapacho, a dog eater, yajivagre vartite namatubhyam, if he has the holy name of Krishna, I think in the commentaries it says even just hanging on his tongue. If he's come to that point where it's even just hanging on his tongue, then it's considered that he's already bathed in all the holy rivers. He's performed all sacrifices. It's the topmost transcendental activity. And what's mentioned here is that all these results will automatically come from bhakti. You see, immediately by rendering devotional service of Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. See, again, the word is used, causeless knowledge. In other words, the knowledge will come, but it won't come by simply your effort to acquire knowledge. But the knowledge will come causelessly by the practice of devotional service, by bhakti, it will automatically come. Automatically those realizations will come from performing devotional service. Therefore, that's that verse, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Twam Yenamam Upiyantite Tesham Satita Yuktanam Bhajitam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Twam Yenamam Upiyantite. That for one who's engaged in devotional service, Tesham Satita Yuktanam, always, Bhajitam Priti Purvakam, with love and devotion, the Dami Buddhi Yogam Twam, the knowledge and understanding will come. How to come to Krishna. Automatically, in the 11th canto, there's one verse, Bhakti Parashanu Bhavo Bharaktir. I forgot the verse, but it says that when one performs devotional service, three things will happen automatically. Automatically, you'll get devotion from performing Krishna, you know, devotional service, practicing it. Renunciation will come, and also knowledge will come. Just as when one is eating, three things happen automatically. You become, your hunger is gone. You become satisfied, and also you get great pleasure. So when you perform devotional service, these three things will come. In a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says they'll come together. He says if you're expressing sentiments above your realization, if your devotional sentiments are above your realization, he said that's false devotion. If your renunciation is beyond your devotion, that's false renunciation. They'll all come together. So you're not lacking anything by performing devotional service. Rather, these things will come. And therefore, Prabhupada says, the other high-grade activities designated as sacrifice, charity, or austerity, and all corollary factors following the pure and scientific devotional cult. And Prabhupada will discuss how this happens. He says, the bhakti cult is meant for realization of the positive form. When the positive form is realized, the negative forms are automatically eliminated. Therefore, with the development of the bhakti cult, with the application of the positive service to the positive form, one naturally becomes detached from inferior things, and he becomes attached to the superior things. So when you actually focus the consciousness on Krishna and realize that and perform activities in devotional service, automatically you become detached. Automatically you lose. And then that verse in Bhagavad Gita, Vishya Vinivartante Niraharasya Dayana Raso Rajam Raso Pyasya Param Dvisva Navartate. By the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, by understanding the reality, the automatically you become detached. And therefore Prabhupada's also explaining that to show how some people misunderstand that because people in devotional service are performing so many activities, they misunderstand that these people are not detached or qualified because they're chanting and dancing and performing so many activities in the world. But the fact is that they're completely detached. They have no desire for personal sense gratification. They have no desire for personal sense gratification. And therefore Prabhupada said, becoming detached from material things does not mean becoming inert altogether, as men with a poor fund of knowledge think. Nice karma, or getting rid of activities, means not undertaking activities that will produce good or bad effects. Negation does not mean negation of the positive. Negation of the non-essentials does not mean negation of the essentials. Similarly, detachment from material form does not mean nullifying the positive forms. So a devotee is detached who surrendered fully to Krishna and engaged in his service. And the conclusion, Prabhupada said, the sign of a devotee, he's not a fool, he has knowledge, and he is engaged in inferior activities. He is detached. This is not possible by dry reasoning. It is actually happens by the grace of the Almighty. In other words, by the process of bhakti, the way we become detached is we serve Krishna with that's our detachment. We serve Krishna fully. And that's bhakti. And nothing else. And by that service to Krishna, because he is a person, by engaging in our relationship with him, by service, he reciprocates. And we'll see later how that happens. All the anarthas get removed from the heart, but by Krishna. And therefore you can achieve levels of renunciation and devotional service that are not possible by jnana or vairagya, by your own effort. So this is Sutta Goswami is saying, by devotional service, you will not be lacking anything. Rather, by serving Krishna, everything will come, detachment and knowledge, and more than if you did it on your own power. Okay, text 8. Dharma Svanushtita Pumsa Vivek Sena Katasuya Nopariye Yidi Ritim Shrama Eva Hikavalam. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. Are there any questions on the last verse? James, did you understand that point about devotional service automatically giving one detachment?
Definitely. And I remember Raghunath and Kate happened to kind of point out this the same point. They spoke of impersonalists through a magazine Raghunath was speaking about at one class, and Kate one time at Giri Govardhan's, were kind of attracted by the renunciation of the impersonalist.
Right.
And they were kind of, ultimately it came to the point of they're missing this other quality of bhakti. And so therefore they were incomplete.
That a devotee is renounced.
A devotee is renounced. I mean, they were very attracted to the level of renunciation we saw in these personalities.
It's attractive. But the point here is a devotee is renounced. If he's complete, renunciation means to be surrendered to Krishna's will. In that type of renunciation, there may be some sense of self-indulgence. It's your nature, you're attracted to it. But bhakti means the real renunciation, you're surrendered to Krishna's will. And in fact, Narada Muni, he got a darshan of Vishnu, sakshat darshan of Vishnu, and then Krishna went away, and then he was still hankering, and he manifests in terms of sound. He said, "You had not seen me because you were impure and incomplete in service." But what was his impurity? He was attached to renunciation. He wanted to be he wanted to go to the Himalayas and meditate. He was attached to that. So he still was impure. That's extraneous to the soul. Anything besides service to Krishna is extraneous to the soul. It's personally motivated. So he was attached to the mode of goodness. He wanted to be peaceful. That was his attachment. And because of that, he had to stay here in the world. And then later when he became liberated and he became perfect as Narada Muni, what did he do? He began to preach. He didn't go to the Himalayas. He just surrendered to Krishna's will. So that's the real detachment. And that's tough. And that's the kind of detachment that we have to undergo. What does Krishna want for us? And then whether we can do it or not, that'll test our detachment. Now this next verse, it's explaining the same thing, that devotional service is the principle of religion, that it's the parodharma, but it's establishing it the same point but from a negative viewpoint. If your activities do not lead to bhakti or an attraction or an eagerness for Krishna consciousness, then they're useless. This is another way of saying that the real dharma, the real duty, is to become Krishna's devotee and become attracted to him, and bhakti or devotion. Symptom of your devotion for someone is your eagerness and attraction for him, and attraction for hearing about him. So here, it's from the negative point of view. They're useless. And they're useless because they don't satisfy the self. And if you read the purport, the same point that I presented in text 6 is presented again, how different occupations are there in terms of different conceptions of life. But ultimately, the self is beyond the gross body and subtle body. He's the potent active. Without knowing the need of the soul, one cannot be happy simply with the emolument of the body and the mind. So there may be dharma and activities. But if those activities ultimately don't lead to devotional service or attraction for Krishna, then those occupations are useless. As Prabhupada explained before, because occupations or duties are meant to sustain the self. And what is the self? The self is part and parcel of God, meant for his service. So if your activities or your duties, your occupational duties, are not connected with that ultimate goal, then they have no value. They ultimately have no value. And I'm not going to go into every purport in detail, but I'm expecting the people that are hearing these tapes are reading the purports. Read the purport and see how Prabhupada's explaining that. And now the point is specifically it says, Nopadiyed Yadi Ratim, and it says, Vishvaksena Katasuya. If it doesn't lead to Rati or attraction, Nopadiyed, Upadiyed, if it does not produce Rati or attraction for Krishna's message, then it has no value. And that's our standard. That's our standard for analyzing all our activities. In other words, everything is secondary to developing attraction to Krishna consciousness. If you decide to get married, your decision should be based that activity will make me more peaceful to practice Krishna consciousness and get attraction for Krishna. And if it doesn't, it's useless. So it's, of course, it depends on the person. One person is really sufficiently detached. He doesn't need to get married, and therefore marriage will only be a distraction for him. Then that activity is useless for him. Another person, he needs to become married to, you know, satisfy his senses and be peaceful, etc., for the higher endeavor of Krishna consciousness, and then that activity is useful for him. So this is actually our standard. And this is our standard. And Prabhupada will discuss this. There is dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will invoke our divine consciousness that I am a servant of Krishna. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord, and any occupational activity which does not help one to achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is said in herein to be simply a waste of time. Chanting and hearing about Krishna is the process to awaken our eternal nature as Krishna's servants, which is the activity which will actually satisfy the self. So an activity has value or no value or detriment according to whether or not it helps us become attracted to chanting and hearing, which is the process which will actually lead us to perfection. So this is presented here. Okay. You have some questions?
It seems pretty...
I wanted to finish 9 and 10 on this tape, but I think it won't happen. But
much.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it seems as though the first point made in the purport, it talks about material activity. And...
Please be clear.
When... Okay. This might be difficult because I'm trying to follow this train of thought that seems like it's working through the purport. Because it says the dormant spirit soul. But we're always taught, we're also taught in a possibly different context that this dormant means inactive. But we're told that the
soul... No, that's not what it means here. Dormant means is that it's like... It means sleeping. It means... The nature of the soul the nature of the soul is inactive, which is service to Krishna, and therefore Prabhupada said that it's manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Dormant just means, he's talking about devotional service. It's just like Prabhupada gave the example of a child walking. The capacity to walk is in the child, but it's dormant. So the capacity to serve Krishna is there within us, but it's dormant. That's what it means.
So the capacity for devotional service.
Yeah, it's dormant.
Okay.
It's just like someone has an amnesia and forgets that he's such and such and part of that family, right? He is part of that family, but that concept or idea now is forgotten or dormant. Maybe when he goes to the psychiatrist, it'll be awakened. Okay, we may only be able to finish this verse, but basically, I'm basically tell the next two verses. The next conception or misconception that one may have about devotional service is that it's for material gain. People think this way, that devotional service is meant. I remember my father used to work in Harlem. We're going to lose this, but he used to tell me about this one man called Reverend Sam, the money man. You worship God to get money. So he's going to say, dharmasya prabhagasya, that occupational services are meant for ultimate liberation. They're not for material gain. In other words, dharma is meant for the pleasure of Krishna. Our activities are meant, our occupations are meant for the pleasure of Krishna. They're not meant for material gain. And then in verse 10, we'll discuss this more tomorrow. Verse 10 says, therefore, what is material gain meant for? It says it's not meant for sense gratification. It's meant for preservation of our body, lobho jivaita yavata, that it's meant for preservation of our body for the purpose of realizing tattva or the truth. That's what our life is for, to actually realize the truth and live by the truth. It's for realizing that Krishna is God and that we're his servants and understanding that clearly. And material needs and material gain are meant to put us in a peaceful situation for that endeavor. But it says, kamesriya nendriya priti. It's not for priti, indriya priti. It's not for the satisfaction of the senses. It's not for sense gratification. That's not the purpose. It's to live peacefully, but for jivasya tattva jigyasa, for the realization of this truth, that it's for hearing this Bhagavatam and understanding what the purpose of life is. So I think we'll end here today. Tomorrow I'll go over, or the next